On this week's Of Record, football bro Jared talks NFL and NCAA media rights, the TikTok trend that is not a TikTok trend, and why don't more retail establishments serve alcohol on this week's Of Record.
Of Record is a podcast focused on the marketing and advertising industry from the perspective of industry expert Joe Clements. Joe Clements is a co-founder of Strategic Digital Services, a digital marketing firm based in Tallahassee, Florida, and founded in 2014.
I'm Joe Clements, and this is the podcast Of Record. Everybody, it's your host Joe here with co-host Kirsten.
Hello.
Co-host Jared.
What's up?
And producer Alex.
Ayo.
And next to me, Skeletoni.
What's up?
Getting real spooky.
Skeletoni is our full-size skeleton Halloween decoration. He's sitting here in the studio.
You know what it is.
Okay, so first story, and we meant to do this about a week ago. But it's been busy. We were on the road. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of people on the road in the last couple of weeks. I don't think Kirsten's been home for more than two straight nights in a while.
Yeah, it's weird sleeping at home now. I don't know where
she's
I
on
am.
That water planet.
I am.
Is it the water planet? When you're traveling, is it technically in the interstellar metaphor? Are you on the water planet or are you on the space station?
Oh, you're in the tarmac, my dog.
You're in the space station.
I was thinking like the window room where he falls through the black hole and you're just like, you idiot.
Oh,
don't go.
So when you're traveling, because if it's the water planet metaphor, I think when you're traveling, you're on the satellite where time is moving faster for you. So you get older, but the people on the water planet are still the same age. Mm-hmm. That's what I think it is. Mm-hmm. Okay. So getting started, let's talk about, Jared, should we talk about NCAA, or should we talk about NFL first?
Probably NCAA first.
All right, NCAA. Football is the, I would say it's the last bastion of network cable TV. It is the stronghold that they have for generating revenues. And we'll get to these stats in a moment, but double-digit portions of network TV revenues are coming from ad sales on football. I think some of the most interesting dynamics in the media world right now are happening in college football, because college football is dissolving effectively into something that I think will resemble in the decade European soccer, European football clubs.
How so?
Well, so let me go through some of the numbers and I'll make my case. So this is out of the LA Times revenue distribution deals per school. So in the Pac-12, who is losing members, who jumped the Pac-12 this year, UCLA, USC, mm-hmm. Into the Big Ten, the average revenue deal per school in the Pac-12 was $33 million. The Big Ten revenue deal was $54 million. That's about $20 million extra just for changing conferences and, you know, maybe a little more air travel when your school is on the road playing those conference games. This dropped the estimated value of Pac-12 media rights by about $200 million annually, from $500 million with USC, UCLA, to about $300 million without being estimated. What I think is interesting that is going on here is there's this realization that the biggest value of college sports is not accrued to the university, per se. It's accrued to the value of the distribution rights for the content. So the university alone would never have a value of their football game of, you know, $100 million for their team. when you package this up and you sell it to advertisers, it becomes extraordinarily valuable. Maybe the most valuable product in the entire media world, short of perhaps some of the really big movie and TV production houses and networks themselves. In fact, you may be able to make an argument that some networks are less valuable in total than the NFL or NCAA sports packages that they own. So let's look at really quickly what I thought was interesting here is what's actually going on. So why are teams switching conferences? Teams are switching conferences because they're doing, in the great history of all business, they go through processes of bundling and unbundling, bundling and unbundling. We are in the process in college football of bundling, and we're bundling around two big packages. Jared, what are those packages? The two big conferences.
Oh.
Football bro Jared's really letting me down today. He's not reading between the lines. I did no prep for him with this. I just like, Jared, let's talk about football on the podcast and gave him the articles.
I mean, top three are SEC, ACC, Big Ten currently. But for media, it's Big Ten, SEC.
So let me tell you what the numbers are, total homes in each conference. The Big Ten has 34 million 400 homes in the conference. Number two, the SEC is close to half that at 18 million. The Pac-12 at 14 million. The Big East at 10.4 million. The ACC at only 10.2 million. And then you fall into single digits of millions. The Big Ten and the SEC combined have more than half of the total households in the United States in their conferences. What this is a battle for is who controls the biggest media markets in the country. And so this realignment is taking place over who gets LA. That's why USC, UCLA both left, so the Big Ten could have the LA market. The ACC is not as big as you would think because a lot of these schools in the ACC are not in huge media markets themselves. Tallahassee, where FSU is a small market. Miami is a big market. LSU is not a big market. North Carolina is not a big market.
LSU's SEC.
Yeah.
Yeah, LSU's SEC. Not a huge market. Even is there a New York? Boston is a big market or a bigger market.
Syracuse
is a small market. So the ACC, despite having a lot of well-known schools and maybe a lot of alumni in big cities, yeah, is not a home market. Now, this is where it gets fuzzy, by the way. So let's take Syracuse, right? Syracuse has a DMA, is not a big market. But Syracuse has an alumni base, primarily lives in what city?
New York.
New York. So they're in the biggest media market, which makes them, you know, marginally more value as a media rights deal. And so you have this extra layer of things, which is you're not just aligning a conference by where is that school's home media market. You're aligning that conference by where is the alumni base. Now, this is becoming more complex because of what's happening at these large state schools that are becoming increasingly competitive. So here in Florida, we would say UCF, USF. 15 or 20 years ago, they wouldn't even be in the same league as Florida State or UF in terms of competitiveness. They are increasingly competitive as the NCAA itself becomes more and more competitive because of media deals, conference realignment, NIL. This is another big thing. Name, image, likeness. SEC players aren't at the top of name, image, likeness. Part of that is because the SEC schools are in small markets and the Big Ten schools are in big markets where there's more sophisticated advertisers who will think of things to do, who can hire athletes to do more intelligent things for their business besides just literally pay them to come to a school. Hmm. Everybody tracking? Is that making sense?
What I'm saying? Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
All right. So The duel that's going on here is who is going to be, and I think this will look a lot like the NFL, where every media market is going to end up with a primary team and a secondary team. The primary team will have all its game shown on network in market, ESPN included. The secondary team will have at least all of its away games shown on the network, which is what the NFL does. And there's enough distributions, you might find that all the primary and secondary get shown as well. So that's the battle that's being set up here. You know, here's an interesting, to give you an idea of these ratings for some big schools, TV audience for Auburn is only 3.5 million. TV audience for Texas Tech is 843,000. Those are big schools, competitive football programs, but not actually super valuable in terms of how many people are going to tune in and watch the game on an average basis, unless those teams are really good and vying for the national championship. So there was one last thing I saw on here that I thought was interesting to talk about. And we'll get to, actually, I'll cover this now. So the other interesting thing, to give you an idea how powerful football is in the media world, share of ad revenue coming from football, and this is out of the Washington Post, Fox's revenue, 45% of total revenue comes from football. On ESPN, it's about 42% comes from football. For CBS, 27% comes from football. For NBC, 22% comes from football. Football is the value of these networks. If you took football out of the networks and put them on, say, Amazon or Apple TV or something like that, you would probably come close to collapsing the network. They're not going to replace football with, you know, I don't know, some side sports package. And I'm scrolling around here on this email. I need an assistant for this podcast to pull my stats.
Command F.
Okay. So the other thing about college football that is interesting, and there's a nice little chart in the State of the Screens email that had this, is how money flows through from you, the cable subscriber, to the conferences themselves. And so it goes from your cable bill, part of it's taken by the cable company, part of it's taken as a retransmission fee to the TV station, if it's a local station hosting it, then part of it goes to the affiliate fee. So let's say Fox, then what's remaining goes to the actual rights fees paid by Fox to the, say, Big Ten in this case. So what's interesting is the amount, like the $1.2 billion you see that Fox pays per year, is actually only a portion of the amount of money that's being transacted, since there's a take by the cable company and a take by the TV provider before Fox even pays. So big money. Jared or Kirsten, any thoughts on college and media before we move to NFL?
I'm shocked about the SEC numbers. Maybe because we just live in the South. When you said the Big Ten was almost twice as much as SEC numbers, that was really shocking.
Definitely puts things into perspective. You think you're watching the biggest of the biggest when you're watching, you know, Auburn and Alabama or LSU and Alabama or anything like that. And then you go over and watch, Michigan play, you watch them play Michigan State, and you're just, at least down here, it's like, okay, like that's big, but wow, Alabama's playing, like, let's go watch that.
Yeah.
And it's over anywhere else. It's, are you kidding me? Which is just crazy.
Yeah. It also shows how big, kind of, at least in college athletics, your regional sports bias tends to be.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that I think is happening that you're going to see, and why I think you're going to end up with two conferences in the end, and two different strategies that can be pursued here. The Big Ten is clearly pursuing the strategy of just give us the schools from the huge markets. We don't care if they're good or not. Irrelevant their history, irrelevant if they're good. Give us big schools and big markets because those have big alumni bases that will watch in Orlando, Atlanta, New York, LA, you know, wherever. So that's the goal, Big Ten strategy. I think the SEC strategy is to create a collection of prestige football programs independent of the market in which they're located. That way you are guaranteed to have a disproportionate share of the premium slate national games. So your afternoon games for the Big Ten may be really valuable and be most of the slate, but the evening games and the ESPN spotlight games, the game day games, are going to disproportionately be your SEC games. And so when you look at it like that, I mean, I don't know off the top of my head, Jared, who is, by the way, and this is why I think it's a done deal that Florida State and Miami are going to leave for the SEC at some point, because you want to put that rivalry on your schedule. You want one of those two teams to be good. Those are legacy programs. Are there any other teams you see that are kind of outstanding to be realigned? To me, it's obvious that in Central Florida, you would have maybe USF or UCF move to Big Ten.
Well, UCF's already set to move. Or, no, they did already move. Never mind.
Big East, right?
Not any that stand out, really.
Vanderbilt's already in the SEC and it's in Nashville. I'm thinking of the larger media markets. Who's playing in New York?
Do New Yorkers watch mostly football?
We'll get to that in a minute.
That's a transition, though. I'm trying to think. I mean, I think a big takeaway from this is culturally, like, we already know the country is very diverse in its own respects and everything, but it's very interesting to break it down by college culture. I mean, college football culture, how serious people take it. Like, is it dynasty levels with families, but going to the same school, like a legacy? Or is it just simply like, oh, I just go to this school because, like, I want to go to this school? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's interesting on how different it is. Like, football in the South is totally different than football in the West.
So looking at the media market rankings here, New York, and I'm looking at some Nielsen ratings that a couple of researchers, Chris Hawk and Scott Herko, have put together that shows what media markets, what leagues are dominant in media markets. So New York is the top media market. It is all Big Ten, Big East. LA is now dominant Big Ten. Chicago dominant Big Ten. Philadelphia number four, Big Ten and Big East. And you don't get an SEC market until Dallas-Fort Worth. And then you get Atlanta, which is split with the SEC.
That's pretty crazy.
Yep. And then you have Houston, which is SEC. Washington, DC, which is Big Ten. Boston is ACC. So looking at this, most of your home markets for your SEC teams are pretty far down the list.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. It's just a different strategy. Is the SEC is going to build the prestige league, and the Big Ten is going to have the big, big schools that are just in big markets. Or have alumni bases that are in big. So, like, I guess Michigan is the Detroit media market, right? So it's already in a big market.
Yeah.
So how do we get more SEC school alumni in these cities so that they can watch more SEC football?
The schools would have to produce. Yeah, here's the thing. Like, Auburn is never going to be as big as FSU. Mm-hmm. So you have some schools that are just designed to, and that's not even a good example. Like, FSU is probably never going to be as big as Central Florida or South Florida, because those are big schools and big metro areas that are really serving a different population. So the way I think this works is if the school is really in a college town that's off the beaten path, that's going to be a good candidate for SEC. If the school is in the metro urban area, that's going to be a good candidate for Big Ten, with the exception of the Big Ten is going to have some of these mega schools like Michigan, where you get Detroit and you have a bunch of Michigan grads in Chicago, and Wisconsin's Big Ten too, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so a lot of Wisconsin grads live in Chicago. So Big Ten gets Chicago without having to have a big school in Chicago.
Yeah. And then Indiana, Illinois, Northwestern, Nebraska.
Yeah. Yeah, and Nebraska is going to be a prestige listing. It's not a huge media market.
Don't get me started on my rabbit hole of why Omaha is the biggest, best secret
have a place to live as a young professional. I could go on forever.
How do you know this?
Because I watch a lot of YouTube at night. No, I mean, the too long didn't read is that like Omaha is like a hot, 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 good city for young professionals. And
there are a bunch of like, you know, corn-fed farm hotties running around out there.
Oh, yeah.
Do I need to take a trip to Omaha?
You should.
Do I need to find some work in Omaha?
Yeah.
Okay. They love college baseball in Omaha. That's all I know. And Warren Buffett.
Omaha is the place to be right now. And everybody's sleeping on it. Just saying.
All right, we're moving to Omaha.
Perfect.
So, out of State of the Screens, NFL franchise value soar, driven by ever-expanding media rights. The average value of an NFL team grew by $1 billion last year. Kirsten, estimate the average value of an NFL team.
Average one? I'm going to say the average Joe Schmo team is 4.5.
You're very close. Ooh. Great job. Yeah. The five most valuable NFL teams. Are you in the email, Jared? I'll just let you read it. Tell me the five most valuable NFL teams.
Dallas Cowboys, baby. Woo. $8 billion. New England Patriots, $6.4 billion. Los Angeles Rams, $6.2 billion. Very close to the Patriots. The Giants are 6.0. Very close to the Rams, and Chicago Bears at 5.8.
Okay.
Those bottom three are pretty close.
And Jared, make an observation about all those teams. Where are they located?
All of them in very large DMAs.
All of them in the biggest DMAs. Yep. They're basically the top, those are five of maybe the top eight DMAs. So you can see the NFL is already onto that game, which is why you get, you know, teams moving from time to time. Even having won the national championship, the Rams would not be the number three value team had they not moved.
And what reinforces that is the NFL team's revenue breakdown.
Oh, yeah. So one of the reasons the NFL is competitive, though, is because they have revenue sharing, and the teams equally split the media deals they do. So 61% of team revenue comes from media. So every team has this nice, soft, $100+ million padding a year they get from the media rights deals. Then you get tickets and advertising sponsorship. Tickets are 20% of revenue, advertising sponsorship 10. Now, tickets do distribute according to the team. So, and this is where the value differential really comes from being in a big market, is you can have a bigger stadium with higher price suites, higher price tickets, and you can drive that ticket value up, and you can drive your advertising sponsorship and your licensing up.
If you can sell them.
If you can sell them, yeah. But the advantage of being in a big market is you have a larger pool of people to sell to. So, I'm sorry, and I actually misread. The estimated 2024 value for each team is going to be $400 million paid out in media rights to each team.
Wow.
Regular season viewership had fallen for a while. It had peaked at 18.1 million viewers in 2015. And had fallen by 2020 to 15.6 million, which is a big drop. Rebounding last year to 17.1 million. And this year, Jared, you told me that the first game showed they were above pace from last year.
Yes, above pace. They had 121 million viewers.
Total.
In week one.
Yep.
5% increase from the same week last year at week one.
Okay. And so that sounds actually pretty close to this, because the number I'm reading is 17.1 million. That's for the average regular season viewership. And you're saying all games combined.
Yeah. All the games. Yep. Yep. And then, yep.
So, you know, the stat I thought was most interesting that I saw here, which is also powerfully explanatory of how market size is so influential on team value.
So just really quick before we go back, says the league averaged about 18.5 million viewers across its seven broadcast windows in week one. So that is on pace to break the 17 number that you said.
Okay.
Yeah.
So again, going back to market size, which I think is still the dominant story of these media rights deals. So according to the Sports Business Journal, top five NFL teams for a home market household rating. So essentially what percentage of households are tuned in to the game when the game is played. Kirsten, who do you think is the most intense city about watching their team play?
Jared's like giving me a look over here. You know, I actually want to say, I know I just made a joke that do people in New York actually watch football, but I think it's the Bills.
So yes, it is the Bills.
They are insane.
They're nuts.
Bills Mafia, 77.2% of households are tuned into the game. Number two,
it makes a ton of sense.
Kansas City Chiefs, 45.3. Yeah. Number three, Green Bay Packers, that 41.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, New Orleans Saints at 40.9. And number five, the Pittsburgh Steelers at 36.2.
I mean, it's I mean this respectfully, but like y'all are insane in all those cities.
Yeah.
Like in a fun way.
Yeah. And guess who played last Thursday night? The top two, Buffalo Bills, Kansas City Chiefs.
So, you know, what's interesting about this is these are also the most, aside from the Bills, teams that have been consistently good for the past two decades.
Uh-huh.
Might be the Bills season. We'll see. So now these are small markets. These aren't the top valued teams. They just happen to be the teams that have been pretty good, you know, by and large for a while. And in small markets, like people tend to live there longer, tend to be more intergenerational, mm-hmm. tend to be less competing options of things to do. That tends to be the cultural standing point in the fall. So people are doing it. Now let's go bottom five teams for home market rating. Kirsten, ooh. Who are the, in what cities are people least caring if the NFL team is playing?
Jacksonville Jaguars. Baby.
No, Jacksonville's a small market. It's not on here. My guess would be Jacksonville's in the 30% range of people tuned in.
Can I get a second guess?
Mm-hmm.
Of big cities? I'm actually going to go.
All NFL cities.
Okay.
Least fan engagement.
Denver Broncos.
No, I bet they're pretty high up on here too.
I really just don't. Okay, whatever. I'm not going to get
Well,
into
Jared,
that
open
whole...
that link. Open that link from the Sports Business Journal there and look it up for me. Is there a full list?
Oh, the full list? I can look at the full list. But.
Producer Jared. All right. Do we have a full list in here?
I guess in my brain, I just think everyone in Denver just watches like hockey and that's it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we got a full list. Oh, this is pretty useful.
Oh wow.
Oh wow. Okay. So
Broncos are pretty center.
What's the percentage there for Denver?
24.
25. That's almost middle of the line.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jacksonville is lower than I thought.
Where are they?
18.
That's pretty low.
18%. Wow. I bet in a good year they do push 30. Okay. So jumping back to the lowest.
Eagles are surprising me.
Yeah, Eagles would be a city that I would almost classify in the Buffalo,
those
Green
fans
Bay.
Are crazy.
They are insane.
They will destroy
their
lot,
city.
They're a lot lower.
Yeah.
They're a lot lower, and that's what surprises me.
It's just a big market. I think it's the fourth biggest market in the country, so there's just a lot of people. So the lowest, at the fifth lowest, are the Miami Dolphins at 11.8% of house. Not surprising.
That actually surprises me.
Number four and three are the Los Angeles Rams and LA Chargers.
California.
The Rams. And this is a really good comparison, right?
Yeah.
So the Rams won the Super Bowl last year.
Mm-hmm.
Their average is 10.5% of households in LA watch the games. The Chargers, were they any good last year?
They weren't bad.
Yeah,
they're pretty good.
Okay, 8.5. So the difference between winning a Super Bowl and just being pretty good is like 2 percentage points.
That is a good comparison.
New York Giants, 8.39% of households, and the New York Jets, 7.1% of households.
New Yorkers,
so you much football. I get it.
The bigger the city, the less people really care that much about the team, but because the market is so much bigger, you can do it with a much smaller proportion.
And on top of that, the teams were not, those two in particular were just not good last year. Giants are on the come up though. I have to give them props.
So the NFL's media deal that starts next year is valued at $10 billion a year. That's 10 billion with a B. ESPN is expected to pay $2.7 billion, Fox $2.3 billion, NBC $2.2 billion, CBS $2.1 billion, Amazon cutting a great deal for themselves for Thursday Night Football at $1 billion. What stands out to me about this is for these networks, ESPN, Fox, NBC, CBS, paying $2 billion a year is a big lift. I don't know how they keep the big tech companies out of this, for who $2 billion is like literally next to nothing in some cases. I mean, how much is Facebook spending right now on metaverse stuff? I need to adjust my mic. On metaverse stuff, they might be spending $2 billion a week on metaverse stuff right now.
I don't know how much that Facebook is, but that is an interesting comparison.
In 2021 alone, it was $10 billion for Facebook.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, that's how much they're spending on essentially research. So $2 billion for a tech company a year is less than nothing, especially if it instantly generates revenue.
So Amazon really got a nice deal.
Yeah, no, they just have that Thursday night.
But they only
night
have Thursday
game,
night.
Yeah, which is...
Yeah,
this would be not a great game.
Night. True.
I look forward to that every week.
You like that Thursday night game?
Yeah. I mean, okay, let me be honest, a little off topic, but Thursday night is usually like, yeah, the worst, or more worst of the teams, but it's like the battle is stupid sometimes.
Yeah.
Which makes it so entertaining. It's like,
hey, oh, Jack's playing right before Christmas. It's going to be the gift that keeps on giving.
Love it. Love that journey.
So here's another stat I thought was interesting. This is the TV impressions for last year. And it shows what networks accounted or what media accounted for the most TV ad impressions. NFL across all networks accounted for 9% of ad volumes. So one out of every 10 ads aired on an NFL game. 3.8% on college football, men's basketball, 2.4, NBA, 2. And then you effectively fall into the entertainment category again. So next is Good Morning America at 1.7, the Today Show at 1.5, Major League Baseball at 1.2. But Price is Right. 1.2 out of every 100 ads that air on TV air on the Price is Right.
What?
Yeah.
Well, wild. I mean, if you're just sitting at home and you just got it on TV.
I mean, all the old retired people.
So still in the top 10 is The Young and the Restless at 1.2 and then Sports Center at 1.14.
Wow.
Does it just break down into smaller and smaller segments from there on out?
Yeah, okay. It doesn't even go below the top 10.
Okay.
Ad CPMs. I thought this was interesting. Ad CPMs for ads on the NFL. Do you know what they are? What? NFL regular season CPMs. Take a guess. Alex, you buy a lot of ads. What do you think is the CPM? 18 to 49 demo.
Ooh, probably $20.
$75.
Whoa,
yeah, it's also the most premium CPM you can buy. So that's why the networks are loading up those ad volumes. Top advertisers on NFL games from last year. Number one, Postmates.
That makes sense.
Number two, USAA. Three, AT&T. Four, State Farm. And five, Allstate.
You're in good hands.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I'm looking at a list of the agencies for the top 10 NFL advertisers, and they are all the big holding companies. So Wieden Kennedy, Publicis, Omnicom. Not much variety in there. See, I've seen a Vayner in there, but I don't see Vayner. I think they do a lot of football. What's interesting is how much of the ad revenue. So we talked about those deals. Total deals for the NFL sales coming in at about $10 billion starting next year. The average regular season advertising revenue is about $4.5 billion for regular season, which means you have at least another $5 billion in ads transacting playoffs and Super Bowl. If that stat is to be believed, that sounds low to me. Low. Okay. Next story, Kirsten. What do we got? Anybody? Well, Jared, do you have anything else to say on football?
No.
No.
Respectfully.
I like to watch it. I like to watch football.
That's it.
He threw the ball.
I like to play the fantasy.
He fell down. I'm dominating you guys at fantasy. My auto draft is kicking your booty. Next. Okay. What do you got?
Let me talk about chicken.
TikTok trend. That isn't a TikTok trend. Tell me about it. What's going
Alex
on with TikTok?
Is the one who found this
we need
out.
A segment update where it's like on today's TikTok watch. We discovered Kirsten is a talented voiceover artist this last week. What is your news anchor voice?
I don't have an. I don't think I have to get into character. I have to sit in here alone by myself and really envision the character I am. I can't just do it all.
I'd be something like the latest threat to our youth, poisoned chicken. Go ahead, Alex. Tell us about it.
So these kids are cooking chicken with some sleepy juice, otherwise known as cough syrup.
NyQuil, right?
NyQuil.
Better than cough syrup.
And it's turning it blue, and apparently kids are dying.
Because counter TikTok trend is warning people that boiling NyQuil makes it toxic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what if you were making like codeine chicken?
Codeine chicken.
That would be pretty cool.
Kirsten, we can't start the trends
Sorry.
On this podcast.
It's not a TikTok trend that's not a TikTok trend.
But it's a TikTok trend that TikTok will deny because this goes to my theory on what's actually going on, kind of behind the scenes subterfuge in that world, is I think there's a pretty talented PR comms firm working on behalf of Facebook or Facebook and Google who just sit on TikTok all day, look for the craziest things they find, package it up into a news package, a press release, and push it into the press as a dangerous thing TikTok is doing.
What if this is like an ad for NyQuil?
Man, that'd be smart.
Be bold.
Bold ad. You get a lot of attention.
I haven't seen anybody eat it. I've seen people like act like they're putting it in probably a not hot pan because they're too afraid to even cook it. Because that, you know, if you were making NyQuil chicken, like I'm not saying this is smart, but you'd want to get a nice sear on your chicken before you throw that glaze on it, right? So the pans aren't even hot in these videos. They're cold. They're just putting raw chicken on there. It's not sizzling.
Which makes me wonder if what this actually is just a troll TikTok trend that people are doing as a joke.
Probably.
And then the media is going to pick it up as if it's real.
It's kind of like the pink sauce thing all over again. I don't know if we talked about the pink sauce
on here. I
don't
want to talk about this.
Joe hates condiments of any variety, but it feels like that to me. It's just to cause outrage and people be like, what? You put NyQuil on your chicken, the sleepy chicken?
Yeah, I think a lot of this is just like I think there's a huge regulatory battle that's kind of unfolding under the surface where, you know, Facebook and Google can't forthrightly generate stories about why they don't like TikTok. And we know it's competing with them. It's a great ad product. It gets a lot of impressions. It's still value priced. So I think what they're doing is kind of throwing shade through third parties on it to try and get regulators to take action against it.
Right. You know what I wish someone would take action against? Alcohol in retail stores.
All right. So this is final segment, something we've been wondering about in terms of concept for retail is everybody knows when people drink, they buy more. At least 15% of sales on Amazon have to be from drunk people who are just home alone and don't even remember the next morning they bought it.
Which is only going to go up with Thursday night football.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is something we forgot to talk about.
Good callback. So why isn't there more retail shops that serve alcohol or integrate some sort of alcohol service into the shopping experience?
I think it'd be smart, but I'm sure part of it is number one, the liability, and number two, the license issues of getting it and selling it and manning/womaning the stations that would sell it.
All right. So what you're saying is the cost of doing it probably...
I think the cost is over their heads.
Well, it doesn't work for every sort of... it doesn't work for anything low margin.
No. Yeah.
But Kirsten brought this up. That if you put like a wine and beer like bar in Target, Kirsten would be homeless.
I would. I mean, there's no point in paying rent right now. I'm barely home. I mean, like, I could just move in at Target.
She would just be walking around half drunk around Target, just buying stuff willy-nilly. Oh, I need that.
I 100% would agree in the right DMA.
Yeah.
So I think Target's actually very close to doing this because I just had to double check it. So a couple years ago, Target launched its own private wine brand called Roots. And if you go Target girl or Target dude or whatever you want to call yourself, you know, if you know, you know, Roots is good. Mm-hmm. It's $5 a bottle. It's probably, I would not be surprised if Target ends up making, like we were talking about, like the vino, bino kind of sort of thing,
yeah.
Coffee, wine, and they serve just exclusively Roots.
Yeah, which I think is a great idea mm-hmm. when people when people shop, because they'll buy more.
Yeah.
True.
I wonder if it is just so much a sense of like licensing or like, is there like a legal hula hoop you have to do to like.
Yeah, but you could figure it out. Like restaurants exist. Like if Chili's can do it, Target can do it.
Target, come on. If you got a Starbucks in there. I'm just saying.
It's the Chili's of restaurants.
Yeah.
Applebee's is the Walmart of restaurants.
Yeah. And I love Chili's, which makes a lot of sense. Last time I was at Applebee's, I was served a frozen corn dog.
So my concept. Wow.
It was so bad. I had to leave.
That's rough.
My concept for this would be you do a setup that's like a bookstore. But it's a bar and a bookstore and a bar. And you have like the table set up inside of sections where it's like, you know, you're surrounded by three bookshelves and all the books are for sale. And they're like different themes. So like some tables are in the romance section and some tables are in the sci-fi section and some are in the, you know, I don't know, self-help section.
I picked up this girl and she was in the self-help section. We had some nice vino binos over obsessive compulsive disorder of some sort. I don't know. like what about the people hanging out in the erotica section?
The erotica section.
You can tell a lot about a person. Yeah. It would be a really easy way to start a conversation.
Absolutely.
To be like, oh, I see you too are into like crazy religious cults. Like, you know, like, I don't know. It would be a good icebreaker.
You like vampire erotica too?
Have you read this?
Have you read that? This is my favorite. So what did I say I would call it? Oh, I had a great name.
I had
Bibliotech.
Yeah.
And I said Alexandria.
Yeah. Okay. That was yeah. It, yeah.
What other concepts would work like that, where you could essentially put the bar and the retail thing together? So like bookstore, wine bar.
I wanted to say like REI or Dick's could do something, but I actually don't think it'd be that popular.
Yeah. Oh, I would do bourbon, leather goods.
Yeah, if you had a little custom little corner where you got like they cut you a little keychain out with the scraps of leather and they put your name on it.
You could maybe get away with that with like golfing places too.
Oh yeah, you could do golf.
Golf would be really good.
Golf store bar.
Yeah.
I think in craft stores it could actually be okay.
Oh, craft stores work really well.
Ladies love that wine in Michael. Oh, if there was wine in Michael's, I might be homeless in there.
Oh, so I think what you would do is like you get seated. And then part of what you order with your table is you order the craft activity you're going to do. And you can go pick it off the shelf. Like, we're going to make bracelets.
Kind of like painting with a twist.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like that.
Oh, that would be excellent.
But it's more of a store. So you're just buying the whatever you want to have.
Yeah.
Imagine if they sold. Okay, so let's say at Walmart, you can shop and drink. What are they selling to drink at Walmart? They have three Man. Things you can pick from. What are they?
Kirkland's vodka.
At Walmart?
Walmart? No.
It was a joke.
Coors Light.
I was going to say Natty Light.
It's going to be Bud Light.
Keystone.
Bush.
And then, like, whatever.
PBR.
Hell yeah. Hey, I love me a good PBR.
Me too.
A hardware store and alcohol together. could work.
Could be interesting.
Like a liability depot issues.
Yeah, that would be when
people play
thing.
With the power tools.
I mean, have you seen men in those stores? They like wish they could.
The Home Depot where like they cut the wood on that giant saw thing in the back. This just in today.
I like it.
Oh my goodness.
You know, and this exists because I find it in some, but like a kind of specialty grocery store that is also a bar. That's kind of like Whole Foods. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like wine bars that are like that. I think that works.
There's some at Greenwise, at the Greenwise in College Town. There's a wine bar.
Yeah, that fancy.
That you can also buy beer at and stuff.
RIP Lucky's Market. You were such a great idea. And I wish we still had them.
We failed you.
I didn't fail Lucky's. I shopped at Lucky's almost exclusively. Almost.
Would a bar be able to do the opposite thing?
It might actually be easier for a bar to just be like, hey, we're going to put in some bookshelves and order some books. Or we're going to like start selling, I don't know, you pick, custom hats.
Could work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Custom belts.
I mean, that just feels like some of the breweries because they have games and they also have their merch.
Yeah. But you make the merch part. So, you know, in the brewery, you're there to have the beer, but then the stuff to buy is like, you can buy. Like,
additional.
I'm talking about a place where like maybe going there to shop is the main thing. And then they push a little alcohol on you because, you know, you'll increase your ticket price. You'll spend more.
They'd be really good for things like back in the day, Sears or Dillard's can do it. JCPenney.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh,
Macy's.
Yeah, the department store back in the day probably would have been a good
Nordstrom.
Yeah.
Hey, it's not too late for some of y'all. Jump on that.
<Not too>. All right, anything else before we close?
People do watch football in New York.
Yeah, like 7% of them. It's just 7% of 15 million is a lot of people, or 18 million, whatever the market size is.
I also wanted to say that Kirsten, on one of our last podcasts about football, brought up the idea of having jerseys with the streams for some of the football games.
Was that me?
Yep. Oh. And last Thursday night, before you go in to click watch now on Amazon Prime, the first thing was a Justin Herbert jersey, a Keenan Allen jersey, a Patrick Mahomes jersey, a Travis Kelce jersey. And those were the teams that were playing that night.
I think on one of the very first episodes of this podcast, 3 or 4 years ago, we laid out what we thought Amazon would do with football, and that was in it. The other piece that'll be integrated is Alexa will issue you a reminder if she knows you're a fan of the team or you watch. I'm like, do you want me to order the jersey in advance of the game next week? It can be here tomorrow.
I mean, it would kill.
Yeah.
It really would. Even if there's what we were talking about earlier, a touchdown by a player, and it popped up with, oh, this player just scored a touchdown. Would you like to order their jersey in the middle of the game?
Yep. Or Alexa's just like, wow, looks like that was a great play. Would you like a Tom Brady jersey?
Literally.
Celebrated for 2 minutes straight.
Yeah, 2 minutes straight. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. If you liked what you heard, please leave us a review. Until next time. I need a closing line. Until next time. Just go around. We're going to go around table. Until next time.
See you later.
All right. Until next time. See you later. Jared.
Go Cowboys. Time.
Go Cowboys.
Fly,
move
go fly.
To Omaha.
Move to Omaha. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Of Record is hosted by me, Joe Clements, with the assistance of producer Alex Reinhard. Of Record is produced at the Trailway Studio in Tallahassee, Florida. This episode was edited by producer Alex Reinhard. Our theme music is composed and performed by Rob Goki. Special thanks to our entire team here at SDS. You can see more information about the show on our website, podcastofrecord.com. As always, we'd appreciate your reviews and ratings in your podcast app of choice. These ratings and reviews help more people discover the show, which helps us keep delivering quality content each week. Thanks for listening.